This is one of those times that it's really exciting to introduce people who are going to be bringing us some information, experiences, research that gives a lot of hope for the future for people. In this case, for people who are diabetics, type 1 diabetes. And as you know, that we have entered in a partnership with our Mudstrut with the City of Hope. The City of Hope has this evening helped us in our next presentation, where we're going to hear about cell therapy for diabetics, which is, this is the hope for islet transplantation. And we have this evening Dr. Ken Ferreira, who is a PhD. He's an associate researcher, professor with the City of Hope, and under the Department of Diabetics and Metabolic Diseases Research. And joining him is one of his patients, Susan Weinberg, who is who's gone through the transplantation of these cells that you'll hear about, and she's going to tell what it's been like before and after going through these transplants. So I would like us to give them both a hand and have Dr. Ferreira talk first.
Maybe it, oh, there it goes. First of all, so I'm Kevin Ferreri. I'm a researcher at City of Hope in the Department of Diabetes and Metabolic Diseases Research. And first of all, I'd like to thank the organizing committee and actually all of you also for inviting me to share with you some of the things we're doing about diabetes at City of Hope. So in case you didn't know, we actually have a very long history of breakthroughs of diabetes research at City of Hope. But tonight I'm going to focus and tell you about one particular program that we believe is a significant step toward curing type 1 diabetes. And as a special treat, we have one of our patients from this program here to tell you her side of the story. So to start out, though, I think I'll share just a little bit about the disease called diabetes, so we're all talking about the same thing here. So diabetes is a condition when the body can no longer properly control the levels of sugar in the blood. And usually our body uses a hormone called insulin to control blood sugar levels. Diabetes occurs when something goes wrong with the insulin system, resulting in very high blood sugar levels. So furthermore, diabetes is becoming an increasingly common disease, not only here in the States where we hear a lot about it, but throughout the world. And in fact, it's increasing at exponential rates throughout the world. The World Health Organization has said that it is one of the major health problems of the 21st century. And it has been estimated that currently about a third of Americans have diabetes or pre-diabetes, and it turns out that somewhere between one in every $6 to $7 of our healthcare goes directly to treating diabetes. So not only is it devastating on a personal level, it's devastating on a national level. And there are some countries throughout the world that are actually spending up to a third of their healthcare budgets on treating diabetes. So when we say diabetes, however, there's actually about a dozen or so different types of diabetes, but the vast majority is due to two, and we call them type 1 and type 2. And type 2 is the one that we hear most about, and it accounts for about 80 to 90% of diabetics. It occurs when the body does not respond appropriately to insulin and is associated with diet and exercise as well as with aging. So it increases as we don't take care of ourselves and increases as we just age. And type 1, though, is a very different kind of disease. Type 1 is an autoimmune disease in which the immune system, which is normally there to protect us, makes a mistake, and it attacks and kills the insulin-producing cells. And so these patients can no longer make their own insulin and must take insulin shots or use an insulin pump or something like that. So that's type 1 diabetes. And though diet and exercise is very good for everyone, type 1 diabetics cannot control their diabetes with diet and exercise. And that's a common mistake that people make. And type 2 sometimes can be controlled with diet and exercise, but type 1 absolutely not. In addition, type 1 diabetics not only experience very high blood sugar levels, but also very low blood sugar levels, which can lead to disorientation and actually comas and even death. And because of this, type 1 is by far the more serious of the two diseases, as these patients cannot live long without taking insulin. So the problem with diabetes is these high blood sugar levels, because the high sugar levels are toxic to the body. And since sugar is in the blood, all the places that in the body that the blood goes gets damaged. So diabetes is associated with nerve damage and kidney damage and damage to the heart and blood vessels and damage pretty much anywhere that the blood goes. So most people on dialysis or with kidney transplants are diabetics. And diabetes is a major contributor to heart disease, increasing the risk of heart attacks by 50% and a threefold increase in the rate of strokes. And this sugar damage that happens in diabetes can also turn cells into cancer cells. So people with diabetes have a 30 to 40% higher risk of getting all types of cancer. And that's one of the things at City of Hope we're working on, to get a better understanding of the relationship between these two diseases, because as you may know, City of Hope is also a cancer center or a national cancer center. So not only are we doing the research on the diabetes, we're trying to understand that relationship and why does diabetes cause this increase in cancer rates. Probably, however, most interest to this group is that diabetes also damages the eyes. Diabetic retinopathy, which is where the disease of the eye is caused by diabetes, it is the most frequent cause of new cases of blindness among adults aged 20 to 74. And during the first two decades of the disease, the first 20 years that someone is diabetic, nearly all patients with type 1 diabetes have retinopathy, and more than 60%, more than half of people with type 2 also get retinopathy. And so that means that in some extent, the vast majority of people with diabetes are losing their eyesight. And actually, there's one last thing that most people don't know about diabetes, and that is that it is fatal. And so all of the complications and all of these problems with diabetes actually results in death eventually. And it's estimated that every 6 seconds, someone around the world dies directly from diabetes. So this is a very serious disease. Now, all these complications I was just talking about are really due to the high blood sugar levels. So better control of blood sugar will delay or prevent these complications. So with this knowledge, we started to think about controlling blood sugar in our type 1 diabetic patients, and we realized that nothing will work better than the insulin-producing cells that they were originally born with. Remember, I told you that type 1 is an autoimmune disease, and so the immune system kills their cells. They don't have the cells. They can't make insulin. And really, if we could get them back to that state, that would really be the best control for their blood sugar levels. So back in 2001, we started a cell therapy program at City of Hope to replace the insulin-producing cells that had been killed by the immune system. And the idea was pretty straightforward. We would isolate insulin-producing cells from donor organs and transplant them into our diabetic patients. And the cells then would start secreting insulin whenever the blood sugar levels rose, just like before these people became diabetic. So the first clinical trial started in 2004, and it ran till 2011. And we transplanted 20 patients, and every single patient who was transplanted had some improvement in their blood control. And actually, 70% of our patients in that first trial were off of insulin, completely off of insulin therapy for more than 2 years. We currently have patients who are still off of therapy. They've been off of insulin for more than 8 years. We have a couple that are more than 8 years. But everyone receives some benefit from transplanting in these cells. And those who have gone back on insulin therapy after the cells we put in began to fail, they actually still have some functioning cells in them, and so the amount of insulin that is required to control their blood sugar levels are actually much less than they had originally started with. So this treatment provided the patients with very stable blood sugar levels and all of them in the normal ranges that they should be. And probably most important of all, they stopped the very low sugar levels, that hypoglycemia that can be so dangerous and potentially put people in comas or in the hospital or whatever. So however, though that first trial was very successful, we learned a lot that in some patients, the immune system would continue to attack the cells that we had transplanted in them, and that causes the patients to have to go back on insulin, as I said. So based on those results, just this year, we started a new clinical trial with a new way to control the immune system. And so far, we've treated two patients, one of whom we have here tonight with us. So I'll let her tell you about her experience. And then if there's time afterwards, I'd be very happy to answer any questions anybody has. But please welcome Susan Weinberg.
Can you hear me? Yes, I think this is on. I want to say I'm privileged to sit here before you. I have been a patient of City of Hope for 20 years. I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes back in 1990. I was diagnosed very late in life. I was 27 when I was diagnosed. It came as quite a surprise. I was very healthy. I didn't eat a lot of junk food. I wasn't overweight. I was an avid exerciser, and I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And like Dr. Ferrari said, with type 1, you have to take insulin in order to survive. And so it became my daily routine, like it is for most people who, you know, brush your teeth, take a shower. I was taking two shots of insulin a day, which gradually over time went from two shots to four shots to six shots to eight shots of insulin per day. So every time I drank or ate something, I had to take a shot of insulin. That was doable, and I continued moving on with my life. I was a high school principal, and I was very active. And over time, with type 1 diabetes, you have high blood sugars, but you also have low blood sugars. I would run my blood sugars very, very high because I was having so many low blood sugars. Now, for a normal person, a blood sugar should be anywhere between 80 to 120. I would keep mine as high as 500. So that I could function, because what was happening to me, and I was considered what's called a brittle diabetic, because my blood sugars were all over the map, high, low, low, high, but I had more lows than high. I would have a blood sugar at 500, and in a half hour, I would be at 18. And there was no rhyme or reason for it. It didn't matter what I ate or how much I ate or when I ate, or how much insulin I took or didn't take, my blood sugars were all over the place. And with diabetes, as I'm sure many of you know, it affects every part of your body. It affects your physical being, your emotional being, and I sit here before you because I've had three major car accidents. I was lucky I didn't kill myself or someone else. I was basically unable to do much for myself. Things that we do on an ordinary day, like take a nap. I couldn't take a nap because I never knew if I was going to wake up. So my husband, who's sitting in the audience tonight, I would call him because he had to work, and I would say, I'm taking a nap. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Call me in an hour. Well, an hour would go by, and at 3 o'clock he would call, and I didn't answer because I had a low blood sugar and I was having seizures, which often led to comas. And these are very, very dangerous. And over time, when you have all of these swings in blood sugars, highs and lows, a lot of people don't realize you're also affecting your brain cells. Your ability to think becomes very unclear. And that is one of the reasons I decided to go look at City of Hope for this experimental treatment. I was unable to function. I couldn't be left alone. I couldn't drive a car. I couldn't walk down the street without being afraid that I, you know, might pass out. And that often happened time and time again. So it was back in 2003 when my husband and I went to the City of Hope, and they were running this experimental transplant, and it was basically for people who were having low blood sugars. And I was desperate. I really was desperate. And I have had, I sit here before you, I was wearing a mask earlier because I recently had my third transplant. You're allowed to have three transplants. I've had three. Let me back up. I've had my first two in 2004. And why I had two was because there weren't enough insulin cells, otherwise known as islet cells. So if you don't get enough cells, and these cells come from a cadaver's pancreas, if you don't get enough cells, they don't produce enough insulin. It may not last for very long. And so I had to have a second infusion, a second transplant back in 2004. And with these transplants, they take the insulin cells of a donor, a cadaver's pancreas, and they take these cells and they do all sorts of good things that Dr. Ferrari knows all about. They try to be sure that they're living and they're plump enough. And what happens is they don't inject them into the pancreas because the pancreas really isn't going to allow the cells to function. They inject them into the liver of the patient. So these insulin cells were injected into my liver. And after the first two transplants back in 2004, I was insulin free within 48 hours. And not only was I insulin free, I didn't have high blood sugars, nor did I have a low blood sugar in 10 years. So I went from 2004 to just about 2014, where I was able to do all sorts of things. I wasn't afraid to be left alone any longer. And it was probably in the early part of 2014 where my blood sugars were starting to climb. And they would get high, and then they would get low. So it was the cycle started again. Because remember, this procedure isn't really a cure yet. It's still very experimental, and the cells, they're in a different place. They're in the liver, so they try to function as much and as hard as possible, and they just get tired and they just die off. And so that's what was happening to me. And I was also, again, experiencing very, very low blood sugars. I was having one low blood sugar a day. Before the transplant, my husband was working from home, and again, I was running my blood sugars probably not as high as 500, but about 250. And I was sitting on the couch reading a magazine, and my husband said, "I'm going to go take a shower." And he was literally gone for 15 minutes. When he came out, he said, "I was seizing on the couch," and this is only 15 minutes later, and my blood sugar was 250. And 15 minutes later, I was 22. And so the cycle was starting again. And the City of Hope developed another protocol that they believe where they can extract more cells, and these cells will live and continue to thrive in the liver a little bit longer than they did initially. So I had my third transplant on August 3rd of this year, so I'm only just a little over 2 months out. And I'm here to say that I'm insulin-free once again. And I didn't really do it to become insulin-free. That's sort of like a bonus. I did it to wipe out the low blood sugars. And since this third transplant, since August 3rd, I have not had a low blood sugar. And with this treatment, you also have to understand that they haven't developed a way to get around this. I have to take what's called anti-rejection drugs to prevent the transplant from rejecting, because they're not my cells, they're somebody else's cells. And with this medication that you take twice a day, and it's very, very heavy doses of medication, come all sorts of side effects, stomach ailments, headaches. I recently had a side effect that I was talking to Dr. Ferrari about that nobody seems to have ever heard of before. An entire body itch where you just continue to scratch. And there's no rash, it's just itchiness. and it's probably from one of the medications. It's never been written about because there's not many people who have done these transplants. So could it be one of the medications? Maybe, maybe not. And so with these medications, you have to be sure that you take them on a regular basis so that your transplant doesn't reject. And people often ask me, if you could go back in time and you knew what you knew, you know, if you knew then what you know now, would you still do another transplant? And I always say, absolutely. The City of Hope not only changed my life, it saved my life. I often always say that I was a prisoner in my own body. I couldn't be left alone. I'm 52 years old. I couldn't work. I couldn't be left alone. We had to have, you know, round-the-clock care. And it's this third transplant has given me my life back. I have a quality of life. My husband can now go back to the office, and I can, you know, go to the market. I can take a walk to the local park and not worry about being found, you know, slumped over, you know, a book somewhere on a bench. And I know that diabetes is a horrible disease, and more work needs to be done. And the City of Hope is working on that. And I, you know, people often ask me, well, you're an experiment, you know, are you, why did you want to do this? Well, I didn't have a choice, because if I didn't have these transplants, I wouldn't be here today. And so how long this transplant will last, I don't know. Hopefully another 10 years or longer. I hope that the cells continue to work so that the City of Hope finds another treatment or a cure, because I don't want somebody else to have to go through what I had to go through. I, like I said, I had three major car accidents, and it was horrendous, and it was just not a way to live. And so I want to thank you for allowing me to speak before you, because I know that diabetes does affect everybody, whether it's affected you or someone you know, someone close to you, or a friend or a distant relative. And it's very, very scary, because you never know what's next. And with your awareness of diabetes and your understanding of diabetes, if you can, you know, spread the word to the person sitting next to you, or you're at a meeting somewhere, or you're at the market, and you can at least tell people what diabetes is. A lot of people don't even know what it is. And I also want to talk about one more thing. Sometimes it's a very uncomfortable topic, is organ donation. A lot of people don't even know how easy it is to be sure that people know that, you know, when you are no longer here, that you want your organs to be donated to science. You go to the DMV and you tell them you want your organs to be donated, and they put a little sticker on your card, on your driver's license. Because without donors, the scientists like Dr. Ferrari wouldn't be able to do what they do. And there aren't enough pancreases, there aren't enough livers, there aren't enough organs around, because people just don't know how valuable organ donation is. And I sit here before you because I'm grateful that I have this opportunity to talk to you and to take each day by day. It's not always a bed of roses. There are some days that are better than others, as I'm sure all of you could attest to. But you just keep fighting the fight, and hopefully there will be a cure. And I want to thank you, Gene, for inviting us. And is there anybody, I'd like to open it up, if anybody has a question or a statement or anything that they'd like to open up for myself or the doctor?
Raise your hands, and then you can be identified. And a mic will be given to you before you start asking your question or make a comment.
My name is Nancy from Silicon Valley. I would like to know, can type 1 diabetics do the pancreas transplant?
Yes, and so a whole pancreas transplant is also possible, but one of the there's two advantages really to the islet cell transplantation. One thing, just to clarify that, the insulin producing cells are a small portion of the cells of the pancreas, about 2%, 1 to 2% of the cells of the pancreas make insulin. And so what our group does is isolate out those cells in a clean room and then transplant them into our patients. Now, because we're transplanting such a small amount of tissue, the immune response of our patients to the cells that we're putting in are much less than they are for the whole organ. So there are procedures for taking the whole pancreas and transplanting it into type 1 diabetics, and that has been effective, but it's a major surgery, and it's also they're on much higher levels of immunosuppressive because there's so much more tissue there that they have to adapt to. The other great thing about the islet cell transplantation is that we are currently growing insulin-producing cells in the laboratory from a variety of cell sources. And so even though there aren't enough donor organs right now, really what we're hoping, what we're planning, to tell you the truth, is that we will take those cells and use those cells for treating. And that's going to make it a much more available treatment for more people, much more widespread, much cheaper, much more effective. And so we're very excited about our stem cell programs and our growing the insulin-producing cells.
Mr. Chair, this is Pamela Apology.
Yes.
From San Gabriel Valley Chapter, and I just wanted to thank both of our guests for coming. I'm currently being treated at City of Hope for being a breast cancer survivor, and I had a situation when I was going to undergo my surgery where I was invited to enter a clinical study in which they would inject the radiation right into me after the lump was removed, so that would eliminate my having to return every day for 6 weeks for radiation. So I did volunteer to do that, and on the day of the surgery, I was met by the legal department, and I was told that I didn't qualify to be in the study because I was blind and I couldn't read the materials and to sign them. So to make a long story short, you know, I mentioned the California Council of the Blind, and I just said, you know, that this wasn't going to be acceptable. So we went through a bunch of channels, and I went ahead and underwent my surgery, and I wasn't eligible for the study. But after the surgery had occurred, the legal department did get involved, and there's an amendment being created in my name so that other persons who, I hope they don't, but who have cancer and who may be qualified for this study won't have to go through the obstacle that I did. And I just want to say that, and I hope no one has to face this, but the City of Hope is tremendous. It's because of them that I'm still here. And thank you.
Another question?
With multiple sclerosis, the autoimmune stem cell therapy has been very successful and has grown rapidly in this country, when just 5 years ago it was only in foreign countries. So in the City of Hope's research, are you looking at doing autoimmune from the person's own bone marrow to grow up those differentiated cells when they become the islet?
So we aren't, so the bone marrow, we actually have a very active bone marrow transplant. It's usually done for leukemia patients in order to, as a cure for leukemia. We just last year transplanted our 10,000th patient, as a matter of fact, with bone marrow. And so we have a very active bone marrow research program going on. So we aren't really using bone marrow to make insulin-producing cells, but what we are doing is we're using them to make what are called regulatory T cells. It's a special cell in your immune system that stops autoimmunity. And we have, unfortunately, I didn't have enough time to tell you all about all this, but we have a very active program trying to stop diabetes at first, but also other autoimmune diseases using these regulatory T cell therapies.
So you're looking for those particular cells that will differentiate so the person will not have to take the
That's drugs? Yes, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. You're doing it. Yeah. Great.
Well, let's see if there's somebody else first. Let me ask one question. The stem cells, are there some that are...
Speak up.
I got the mic in front of me.
Now you're...
I just was wondering with the stem cells for the future of that looks very promising, and I was wondering, this I assume is probably out of your area, doctor, but we've seen some TV programs like 60 Minutes and others that are given this hope of creating organs through 3D printers and things like that, and I'm just wondering, and I know this is not your specialty, but do you see that being a promise for the pancreas and developing these cells so that since the cadavers cells, they're not as plentiful as you would hope? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does. So it turns out that for the islet cells, we do form these little organoids already with our stem cells. And so it's not a whole organ like a whole pancreas.
Okay.
Because for diabetes, the problem is, actually, Susan, for an example, still has most of her pancreas there.
Mm-hmm.
All she's missing is that one cell type that makes the insulin. And so we've been really focusing upon that. And they in the pancreas, they occur in these little clusters called islets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're growing in the lab, is these little clusters of cells, little clusters of insulin-producing cells, and other hormone-producing cells that can be used for transplantation. However, there is very active programs for growing whole organs, and that might be better for things like heart transplants or something else along those kinds of lines, rather than. But for the diabetes, no, it wouldn't be something we would do.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the lady in front of me who had wanted to ask a question, you have the last one.
I've observed for several decades
Could you back off from the mic just a little bit?
Pardon me?
Too close? Yeah,
a little better. You were distorted.
For several decades, the tremendous increase in diabetes. I've got a microbiology degree, and I worked in a laboratory doing that type of work. And it's occurred to me that the flu shot is a source of that autoimmune disease, and that there haven't been any statistical studies to follow to see if this is damaging our population. And you are the first one in my path that I could propose this, and I'd be very grateful if you would do City of Hope would do a statistical study to look at if the flu shot, the way it's been given, has increased the epidemic of diabetes, because I understand it's a cross-reactivity from the protein in the outer coating of the influenza cell that causes, in many cases, diabetes and type 1. So it doesn't make any sense to me that they take 5 strands, put them into a vaccine, and not test people to see if they're getting diabetes from this flu shot.
So that's an interesting idea. It has been looked at, and no one has seen an association between the onset of autoimmune diseases of any sort and the vaccine, and particularly the flu vaccine. There is, however, you are right on one thing, and that is that there seems to be an association between what's called Coxsackie B virus and type 1 diabetes, and there is some correlation with that. There's no currently any vaccines for Coxsackie B, but you know there is a relationship between that virus and type 1 diabetes.
So it's a misunderstanding of mine that the influenza virus.
There's no cross reactivity.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very much. Mm-hmm. Dr. Ferrer, do you have your business card that I might have it?
I
Okay.